come into this place of prayer, of song, of community. This is a place where we bring our whole selves, our complications and our contradictions, where we bring our burdens and we lay them down. Come into this place where we remind ourselves of our Unitarian Universalist values, where we acknowledge what is both broken and beautiful in the world and in our lives. Come into this place called First Unitarian Church of Albuquerque. I'm Reverend Bob LaValle, and I'm delighted to be joined here today by our music director, Susan Peck, and our worship leader, John Eldridge. Our DJ today is Cy Schuster, and our tech team is Vance Bass and Chris Paul, Jordan Jones, and Raymond Wolfgang. And thank you to everyone for making this possible. We so appreciate you. John has a couple of announcements for us.
Good morning. Great to be with you again. We have two announcements. First, in light of the theme of this service, it's a good time to remind everyone that the First Earth team meets today from 12:30 to 2. EarthWeb is First Unitarian's environmental team using study and action projects to fight climate change and help our Earth in many ways. They meet on the second Sunday of every month, as they've been doing for nearly 20 years. They are currently working on legislative advocacy for environmental bills and are planning their next actions. All are welcome. The Zoom link will be in the chat bar at the end of the service. Are you visiting today? Or would you like to personally welcome our guests? Join us today after the service for New to First You. After the credits, at the end of the service, stay in the meeting to be placed in a breakout room with other visitors and our Director of Membership and Communications, Lara Magnuson. She will be available to answer your questions about our community. Those are our two announcements for today. Let's all work together to make ours a great day.
As we light our chalices today, let's pause to reflect on the past year of life in the pandemic. We shared the video we're about to show at the beginning of the pandemic, and we share it again now to mark this hard anniversary.
Praise be the nurses and doctors, every medical staff bent over flesh to offer care, for lives saved and lives lost, for showing up either way. Praise for the farmers tilling soil, planting seeds so food can grow, an act of hope if ever there was. Praise be the janitors and garbage collectors, the grocery store clerks and the truck drivers barreling through long, quiet nights. Give thanks for bus drivers, delivery persons, postal workers, and all those keeping an eye on water, gas, and electricity. Blessings on our leaders making hard choices for the common good, offering words of assurance. Celebrate the scientists working a way to understand the thing that plagues us, to find an antidote, and all the medicine makers. Praise be the journalists keeping us informed. Praise be the teachers, finding new ways to educate children from afar, and blessings on parents holding it together for them. Blessed are the elderly and those with weakened immune systems, all those who worry for their health. Praise for those who stay at home to protect them. Blessed are the domestic violence victims on lockdown with abusers, the homeless and refugees. Praise for the artists and poets, the singers and storytellers, all those who nourish with words and sound and color. Blessed are the ministers and therapists of every kind, bringing words of comfort. Blessed are the ones whose jobs are lost, who have no savings, who feel fear of the unknown gnawing. Blessed are those in grief, especially who mourn alone. Blessed are those who have passed into the great night. Praise for police and firefighters, paramedics, and all who work to keep us safe. Praise for all the workers and caregivers of every kind. Praise for the sound of notifications, messages from friends reaching across the distance. Give thanks for laughter and kindness. Praise be our four-footed companions with no forethought or anxiety, responding only in love. Praise for the seas and rivers, forests and stones who teach us to endure. Give thanks for your ancestors, for the wars and plagues they endured and survived. Their resilience is in your bones, your blood. Blessed is the water that flows over our hands and the soap that helps keep them clean. Each time a baptism. Praise every moment of stillness and silence so new voices can be heard. Praise the chance at slowness. Praise be the birds who continue to sing the sky awake each day. Praise for the primrose poking yellow petals from dark earth. Blessed is the air clearing overhead so one day we can breathe deeply again. And when this has passed, may we say that love spread more quickly than any virus ever could. May we say this was not just an ending, but also a place to begin.
Praise be for this community carrying each other through a hard year. We kindle our chalices in this spirit of praise, lamentation, and gratitude. Come, let us worship together.
Good morning. Our guest musician today is Jenny Bird. Jenny is a singer-songwriter from Taos, New Mexico, and also serves as the music director for the Unity Church of Taos. She graciously shared three beautiful videos with us for today's service. When we are able to reopen the social hall for concerts, I'm really looking forward to inviting Jenny down to give a concert for us. You can find more of her music at her website, which will be in the link that I post on the chat bar. Our opening song today is a favorite with our soul singers. Singing is medicine, musical prayer. Singing puts us right now and right here in the heartbeat, in the breath. Please join Jenny Bird, Melanie DeMore, and Adrian Braswell in song, Singing is Medicine.
Singing is medicine, musical prayer. Singing puts us right now and right here. Singing is medicine, musical prayer. Singing puts us right now and right here. In the heartbeat, in the breath, in the heartbeat, in the breath. Singing is medicine, musical prayer. Singing puts us right now and right here. Singing is medicine, musical prayer. Singing puts us right now and right here in the heartbeat, in the breath, in the heartbeat, in the breath.
Oh, Good morning. I'm Mia Noren, the Director of Religious Education. One of the things we teach in religious education for children are the Unitarian Universalist principles, but we use simplified language designed for kids so that they can more quickly grasp the meanings. Last month, we began saying these principles together as we light our chalice. Later on during the class, we talk about which principles the lesson relates to. We've added a children's version of the proposed eighth principle, and besides appreciating its purpose, use it to explain how you use have a voice and can use their vote for change. Please enjoy this recording of one class sharing the children's principles during the chalice lighting. Miss Anne, would you light the chalice as we say our principles?
Each person is important.
Kind and fair in all you do.
We're free to learn together.
We search for what is true.
All people need a voice.
Build a fair and peaceful world.
We take care of our planet.
We work together for diversity and against racism and oppression.
Thank you, everybody.
Hey, everybody. Steve the Seahorse here. How are you? It's good to see you. You know, I was told that there are puppets in this church, and I thought it might be really cool to talk to the puppets about climate change, right? So, and I also am wondering if they've ever seen a seahorse before. So can you kids help me call them? We're going to call Olivia, Sheldon, and Carl. Olivia, Sheldon. Carl. Hey, everybody. Hey. I think I was right. You've never seen a seahorse before, right? Mm-hmm. Well, was that? Yes, Carl? You know what a horse looks like, and I am no horse. That is absolutely true. But I am a seahorse. Can't you see my fins and my yellow scales, you know? Is that Sheldon? Oh, and horses aren't yellow. Well, yeah, they're not yellow. Of course, that's my point. That's why I can't be a horse if I'm yellow, right? Now, Olivia, maybe you can help clear this up, right? So you're saying, I see a horse, but I'm not a horse. See a horse? Hey, come on. Wait, no. I'm a seahorse. So how do I explain it? So have you all ever seen like the sea or the ocean? No? Okay. Well, it's like a huge, huge body of water, right? Right, Carlos? Oh, yeah. It's kind of like the duck pond, but much, much, much bigger, right? So seahorses are animals that live in the ocean, and they look a little bit like horses, okay? Everybody got that? Okay, great. So, anyways, so here's the thing. The coral reef where I live is slowly dying from the ocean getting more warm, right? That's not good, right? And that's because of climate change. So I'm worried about climate change. And I'm wondering if you are worried about anything about climate change, right? You've heard of it, right? Okay. So what worries you about climate change? Sheldon? Oh, you're worried about drying out. Yeah, that would be sad. And Olivia? Oh, yeah, you're worried about deforestation. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, I should be worried about that. And Carl, wow, you know, Carl says that Carl isn't worried about climate change because coyotes are very adaptable. Well, you're true. You're right, Carl. That's very, coyotes are very adaptable. But, you know, remember our seventh principle, we are all interconnected. So if I'm having a bad time and Olivia is having a bad time and Sheldon is having a bad time, you're probably going to be having a bad time too, right? Even if you're really adaptable. Oh, it's too depressing to talk about. I kind of get that. It is depressing, I agree. Yeah, if the trees die, Olivia, you won't have a place to make a nest. That'd be bad. Big problems, right? But you know, I could worry all the time about this, but I think it's better to do something, right? What's that? Oh, what do? Well, here's what I try to do. I only eat locally sourced seaweed. That's something, you know? So what's that, Olivia? I know you are small, but even small puppets can do something. What's that? Carl. Carl is saying he doesn't really need to drive my car around anymore. You driving my car around, Carl? Ah, you joker. Ah, you had me going there, you. What's that, Sheldon? Oh, Sheldon suggests that the other puppets should do their craft projects with things like egg containers and takeout containers and egg cartons. Good idea. You know, I like that idea, you know, and thanks for cleaning up after your projects. I really like it since we're all living here. What's that, Olivia? You say I'm not really a seahorse? I thought we had cleared this up. Oh, you say I'm not really a seahorse, I'm a minister. Huh. All right, Olivia, I got to give it to you. You saw through my disguise. So what gave it away? Oh, my beard. Yeah, you know, seahorses don't have beards. That is true. So, and you're right, man. This costume is actually really hot and uncomfortable, and I'm going to be really glad to take it off. So, and I'm sure it's really messed up my hair, too. So... let's say it was great to talk to y'all. Let's say goodbye. Have a great day. Bye. Bye. Take care of yourselves. Bye, everybody. Bye, Steve. Let's pause the chat for a few moments during our meditation and our prayer. We'll turn it on during the joys and concerns. Join me in the spirit of meditation. Find a comfortable seat. Feel where you're in contact, where your body's in contact with the room, your feet, your hips, your hands. Let's remind ourselves that our minds are like the sky. Way, way high up, the sky is always blue. But between us and way, way high up, there are clouds and winds blowing through. And just like that, our minds are clouded by thoughts. But above our thoughts, there is a serene space. And we can step up to that space, be aware of that space with just a few breaths. So I invite you to take a deep breath and exhale. Soften your shoulders, soften your jaw. Another deep breath. And in that spirit of the serene blue sky, let's sit together in silence for 2 minutes.
Our community is strengthened when we help each other bear our burdens as well as celebrate our joys. Please use the chat bar to share what is on your heart and to support others as they share what's on theirs. If you're not able to write in the chat bar, please contact the church office or send an email to caring@uuabq.org. The video will prompt us first to share our joys and then later our concerns. Remember that a burden shared is halved and a joy shared is multiplied.
We share our joys and concerns. We share ourselves. We share our lives. We share joys like new puppies and stimulus checks and unemployment benefits and benefits to parents and lifting millions of children out of poverty. We give thanks and we have the joy of vaccines and the joy of the turning of the seasons, of blooming trees, fruit trees in bloom, and flowers. And we have our concerns we carry too. Those waiting still for vaccines, and those still struggling with illness, those missing family and friends, and this undercurrent of anger that is such a part of our life these days. And concern for Stephen Papa as he mourns the passing of his wife. May light perpetual shine upon her. All these joys and concerns, and those joys and concerns held in our hearts, not spoken, but no less deeply felt. We lift all of them up to the great powers of celebration and healing and renewal, known by many names. We pray for Jerry Noble as she recovers from surgery. May she and Linda and her family feel the love of this congregation. May it lift them up as we hold them in our hearts. And we lift up Beth Orell's cousin, Jane, who passed this week. May her family find comfort in each other and their memories. May Beth feel the love of this congregation as well. And may light perpetual shine upon Jane. Let's join our hearts using words adapted from a prayer by Pope Francis. It's a prayer for our earth. All-powerful God, you are present in the whole universe and in the smallest of your creatures. You embrace with tenderness all that exists. Pour out upon us the power of your love, that we may protect life and beauty. Fill us with peace, that we may live as siblings, harming no one. O God of the poor, help us rescue the abandoned and forgotten of this earth, so precious in your eyes. Bring healing to our lives, that we may protect the world and not prey upon it, that we may sow beauty, not pollution and destruction. Touch the heart of those who look only for gain at the expense of the poor and the earth. Teach us to discover the worth of each thing, to be filled with awe and contemplation, to recognize that we are profoundly united with every creature as we journey towards your infinite light. We thank you for being with us each day. Encourage us, we pray, in our struggle for justice, love, and peace. Peace be with you.
Water can take you to the other side. Water is wet, water is cold. It's what we're made of, so I'm told. Water is fresh, the water is clean. It makes the fields fertile and green. Water is snow, water is rain. It brings it all alive again. Take me down to the water. I wanna swim in the water. Take me down. Just below the surface, dove in and swam with what remains. What life is this? Everything's amorphous, dancing with the currents of change. We need clean.
Our reading today is taken from the encyclical letter written by Pope Francis in 2015. The papal encyclical is titled Laudato Si, or Praise It Be. The theme of the encyclical is on the care of our common home. We are not God. The earth was here before us and has been given to us. This allows us to respond to the charge that Judeo-Christian thinking on the basis of the Genesis account, which grants man dominion over the earth, has encouraged the unbridled exploitation of nature by painting him as domineering and destructive by nature. This is not a correct interpretation of the Bible as understood by the church. Although it is true that we Christians have at times incorrectly interpreted the scriptures, nowadays, we must forcefully reject the notion that our being created in God's image and given dominion over the earth justifies absolute domination over other creatures. The biblical texts are to be read in their context, recognize that they tell us to till and keep the garden of the world. Tilling refers to cultivating, plowing, or working, while keeping means caring, protecting, overseeing, and preserving. This implies a relationship of mutual responsibility between human beings and nature. Each community can take from the bounty of the earth whatever it needs for subsistence, but it also has the duty to protect the earth and to ensure its fruitfulness for coming generations. I urgently appeal, then, for a new dialogue about how we are shaping the future of our planet. We need a conversation which includes everyone, since the environmental challenge we are undergoing and its human roots concern and affect us all. We require a new and universal solidarity. As the bishops of Southern Africa have stated, quote, everyone's talents and involvement are needed to redress the damage caused by human abuse of God's creation, end of quote. All of us can cooperate as instruments of God for the care of creation, each according to his or her own culture, experience, involvements, and talents.
Last summer, a friend of mine and I went up to Dixon in northern New Mexico to camp in an apple orchard owned by some friends of ours. The orchard was just a few miles from the Rio Grande, bordered on Embudo Creek. It was August, and it was hot, and we were excited to go splash around in the creek once our camp was set. After pitching our tent and laying out our cooking gear, we headed down to the creek, eager to get our feet wet and maybe cool down a little bit. We got to the creek. We realized that was not to be. The creek bed was bone dry. It was so dry that the river stones themselves looked like bones, bleached white as if the river had never been alive. There were no plants, there were no fish, there was no water at all. We stood there and gaped at the ruins of what was once a healthy ecosystem, a place where insects were born that fed fish and birds, a place where trees drew water and overhung the creek. Now it was a desolate graveyard. The next morning, I went back down to the creek to gather some firewood. As I poked about for some dry cottonwood, I looked upstream, and there, about 50 feet away, was a carpet of water unrolling towards me. In 10 minutes, it was past me. In another 10, it was a foot deep. It was cold, and I let the chill seep into my feet and my ankles. And I thought, what is going on? I asked our host later that day, and they explained that a day or two before, the farms upstream had been allowed to take an allotment of water to irrigate their fields. That allotment had been enough to completely dry out the creek downstream from them. Then the farmers farther downstream were allowed to take their water. So the farms upstream closed their water gates and the creek could flow again, at least until the farmers downstream opened their gates and the creek went dry. And so in that place, I got my first lesson on water rights in New Mexico. Even before I came to Albuquerque, I knew that water was an important issue in the Southwest, maybe the most important issue. But it all came to life to me in that orchard. Water here isn't an extraction. And I saw that our relationship to water has a spiritual element. I read a couple of books to prepare for this sermon. The first is Cadillac Desert by Mark Reisner. Cadillac Desert was published in 1986, but afterward added in 1993. It describes the policies of the US government to bring water to the West. Reisner starts by talking about John Wesley Powell, a geologist who made several trips west of the Mississippi in the late 1800s. During his surveys of the West, Powell came to the conclusion that there were enormous areas that could never support large populations, and that to attempt to do so would be madness. Well, his rational take was no match for the mentality of manifest destiny that the U.S. colonizers brought. And the government became intent on putting farms where farms should not be. The two major players in this were the Bureau of Reclamation and the Army Corps of Engineers, and they became rivals in creating projects for their own sake, spending millions to dam and divert rivers in efforts that made no economic sense, but that were environmental disasters. These efforts were happily encouraged by contractors and real estate developers and their local government enablers. And if you'd like to see this corruption come alive in a really vivid way, watch the movie Chinatown. The book is an indictment of government bureaucracy, of pork barrel politics played full tilt by both parties. I'd call it required reading for anyone in the Southwest who enjoys turning a faucet on and having water come out of it. Second book I read was At the Precipice by the New Mexico journalist Laura Paskus. The subtitle of the book is New Mexico's Changing Climate. Paskus is also a contributor to the New Mexico PBS series, Our Land, New Mexico. It's a fabulous series, by the way, worth checking out. And this book came out last year. It's still in the bookstores. And I also recommend it highly. The book looks at a variety of the impacts of climate change on conditions here, right here in New Mexico, from wildfires to rivers running dry, to the lack of snowpack and the decline in groundwater. She talks about the reliance on the wildly unreliable oil income and the tension between the communities that benefit from the fossil fuel industry and the communities that are blighted by it. The two books, as well as other sources, help me begin to understand the state of water and climate in New Mexico. And here are some things I understand about it now. First, we are clinging to old ways of doing business and old infrastructure, and that has to change. The legacy of water rights agreements is totally bewildering. I simply can't wrap my mind around them. They are so complex. But I do understand the bottom line. At the moment, there are more claims on water than there is water to share. The system is broken. And about the old infrastructure, it turns out that dams and reservoirs are terrible ways to store water. They are giant evaporation machines. At the Elephant Butte Reservoir, in the middle of the desert. About a third of the water is lost to evaporation every year. On top of that, as that water sits in the reservoir, the silt that the water carried with it downstream to the dam stops there and settles in the reservoir. All reservoirs slowly fill up with silt over time. But we see with the brown cap mountains free of snow and the way that the Rio Grande dries out every year, 40 miles south of Albuquerque last summer, the way surface water is declining, that means that every year farms that might be irrigating off of a water source like Embudo Creek in Dixon are turning more and more to wells. This increased reliance on groundwater means that we're using up, in just a couple hundred years, water that took thousands of years to accumulate. We're already seeing the results of that in the East Mountains, where wells that used to be reliable are drying up. Families are having to decide whether to take a chance on drilling a deeper well or moving. And here's a stunning thing that I learned. 75% of the water that is used in New Mexico, 75% is used by agriculture. Now, farmers are obviously an essential part of quality of life, of being alive, but we need to consider just what is being farmed. In New Mexico, there is a deep cultural vein of raising alfalfa and other low-value crops for the sake of keeping livestock. As water becomes more and more precious, we as a society will have to set priorities on crops that feed our children versus crops that feed livestock. And this will be a very, very difficult conversation. There's one more thing I want to talk about, state of our water. That's PFAS. PFAS, P-F-A-S, stands for per and polyfluoroalkyl substances. Don't ask me to say that again, which are a group of man-made chemicals that have been around since the 40s. PFAS are very persistent in the environment and in the human body, meaning they don't break down and they can accumulate over time. And there's evidence that exposure to PFAS leads to adverse human health effects. A speculation that 100 million U.S. residents have been exposed to PFAS, and PFAS does not go away. PFAS is sometimes used in firefighting foam, and this foam was used for years at Cannon Air Force Base in Clovis. And as a result, there's a plume of PFAS that's spreading through the groundwater there. And the U.S. military is not being transparent about this and not acting in good faith to address the situation. Cannon is just one base in this country. I'm going to stop here with this litany of woe. I suspect a lot of folks listening right now are aware of much of this. It's hard to hear and think about. I find myself wondering, what is the role of Unitarian Universalists in this moment? I think one place to start is to consider our relationship as humans to water and the earth. Now, I had to laugh when I chose those pieces from Pope Francis to share during the service, because I'm guessing it might be the first time that a papal encyclical has made it into a worship service at First Unitarian, possibly the last too. As a former Roman Catholic, I obviously had my problems with Catholicism, but as I read the encyclical, I was struck by the grace and humility of the writing. The encyclical is long, it's probably 50 pages, and it builds a powerful case for the defense of the earth based on compassion. Compassion for every living creature and compassion for the humans who are most vulnerable. And there is so much humility in the encyclical. It acknowledges how little we know and how much more science is required. And it calls for the wealthy global North to listen to the global South with humility. In addition to considering our relationship with nature, I think another important role for UUs is to speak the truth. It's hard to believe that there are still climate deniers. And it's even harder to believe that there are people who accept that climate change is being driven by human activity, but who still don't think that we need to change the way that we work and live, change it radically in order to save our species. As I mentioned before, folks probably know, we live in a state that produces a lot of fossil fuel. And the industry is always telling us that the path to wealth for the state is through fossil fuel. But look around. They've been doing it for 100 years. And is New Mexico a wealthy state yet? We need to keep speaking the truth, including the truth that any transition away from fossil fuels needs to be a just transition where workers are provided with paths to employment in other industries, and communities that are damaged and left behind by the oil companies receive support. When I talk about speaking the truth, I also mean that we have to be the voice of the voiceless, the voice of the voiceless. The rivers that are dammed or dry up do not have a voice unless we act as their voice. The wildlife, which loses their habitat to wildfires, do not have that voice. We need to be their voice. Finally, as UUs, we need to nurture our resilience for the long run. I had the good fortune to speak with Laura Paskus, the author of At the Precipice, this week. And I asked her how she takes care of herself, given that she spends her working days being the witness to an epic crisis. And her answers inform my ideas here. There are many ways to nurture our resilience. We need to care for ourselves by grounding ourselves in the things that give us joy. The sweet spot for us lies at the intersection of joy and justice. We need to stay connected to our beloveds, to the people who know us and lift us up. And we need to stay connected to the thing that we are fighting for, nature. You know, unfortunately, we're so blessed to be in New Mexico, where we have so much beauty that's easily accessible. Just in Albuquerque, we can drive 15 minutes in one direction and walk in the foothills, checking out those amazing and weird cacti. And we can drive 15 minutes in the other direction and be walking in the cottonwoods in the bosque. My most prayerful times of the week are when I'm walking with my dog Gus around some open space, looking at the clouds and just slowing down. Another important piece of resilience is cultivating the habit of looking to the good. I'm not saying to pretend that bad things aren't happening, but to acknowledge that progress is being made. For example, back in 2016, the City of Albuquerque Water Authority created a set of policies called Water 2120. It's a 100-year water plan that explores a number of supply alternatives while looking at all these scenarios of climate change and population growth. The cool thing about it is that the plan and its policies focus on using existing water supplies rather than seeking new sources. From 1992 to 2016, the water use per capita in Albuquerque dropped by 50%. 50% in 24 years or so. That is something good to look to. You know, even PFAS, as scary as it is, can be a source of optimism in a way. You know, as I spoke with Laura Paskus, she said that she hopes that PFAS can be a lesson to us. It was manufactured in the 40s with no thought to future consequences. And now we have consequences. She hopes that perhaps we can learn from this lesson to consider the long-term implication of our actions. Laura says that there is no place she'd rather be in this time of climate change than New Mexico. She says that we face all these challenges together and that New Mexicans are resilient and that they understand how to live in the desert. She says they care about each other and don't want their neighbors to fail or suffer. She believes that we can find ways not just to survive, but to thrive. To which I say, amen, and laudato si, praise be.
We take our offering this morning with these words by Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. God, who gave us minds for thinking and bodies for working, would defeat his own purpose if he permitted us to obtain through prayer what may come through work and intelligence. Our Change for the Future recipient for February, March, and April this year is the American Civil Liberties Union of New Mexico. The ACLU of New Mexico protects and advances justice, liberty, and equity as guaranteed by the constitutions of New Mexico and the United States. It is especially focused on groups that have been historically disenfranchised. You can make an offering online by clicking on the link that we'll put in the chat box. And if you prefer not to give online, you can always simply mail a check to the church and include Change for the Future in the memo line. Thank you.
Is clear. It's all passing weather. We are the sky. We are the sky that's clear forever. We are the sky beyond the clouds. All that we feel.
What is generously given is received in gratitude. Thank you on behalf of First Unitarian Church of Albuquerque, and thank you on behalf of the ACLU of New Mexico. As we get towards the end of our service, just want to remind folks that folks who want to stay, join the New to First U space, should stay in the main room when the breakout room assignments come. Just ignore that first assignment. Stay in the main room, and then you'll be assigned to the correct breakout room. And you can ask questions after when it's happening about that. So, but speaking of asking questions, I want to invite you to spur your conversation with this question. I wonder, who do you want to be the voice of the voiceless for? I'm going to put that in the chat. Who do you want to be the voice of the voiceless for? All right, let's extinguish our chalices. As we extinguish our chalices, teach us to discover the worth of each thing, to be filled with awe and contemplation, to recognize that we are profoundly united with every creature as we journey. Go in peace, gentle people, and practice radical love.